Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. The two-month-long session of the state legislature took off with a running start last week, as the Democrat-controlled House and Senate each took only a few days to pass plans to put the state's finances back in the black, at least for this year. State lawmakers still have to figure out how to fill the hole in next year's budget. Republican Governor Susana Martinez and Democratic leaders disagree on some important details. What compromises will have to be made to come up with plans lawmakers like and the governor will sign? Today's show is part of our People, Power, and Democracy project that explores ethics, transparency, and good government in New Mexico. With us today to talk about this is Republican State Senator Stephen Neville. Welcome to the show, Senator.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You come from Farmington, oil and gas country.
Yes.
How has the drop in oil and gas prices affected where you come from?
Well, our economy, because we're primarily natural gas, has been particularly hurt because of this downturn in natural gas and oil prices. There's a huge glut of natural gas in the whole country because of the discoveries up in North Dakota and Pennsylvania area. They've got lots of natural gas. They're a lot closer to the markets than New Mexico is. So our prices have been reduced significantly, and natural gas is what drives the economy in San Juan County.
And when and how is that going to swing back in the other direction?
Well, it'll take a while. There's a lot of gas available, new technology, the way we drill wells with hydraulic fracturing and all of those new techniques have made it possible to extract gas where it wasn't possible in the past. So we've got gas that's easy to get out of the ground. It comes out of a coal seam that's not very deep, but we're not near the markets. We're a long ways from Pennsylvania and New York State and those places that are high population areas that use a lot of natural gas. So it's going to take a while, but it's slowly creeping up. We're looking at $3 and something today, and not long ago it was about $2. It was actually under $2 for a while. So It's looking up, but it's going to take a while.
Meanwhile, this drop in those prices has hit the state hard, and we're out of money for this year by about $70 million, and we have a bigger hole to fill next year. You, in the Senate and in the House, have passed bills already that would solve this year's immediate crisis, and I saw you in a conference committee yesterday where the House and the Senate were trying to agree on some changes that they had made to some of those bills. Tell us what you are sending to the governor already.
Well, we've got two bills that will be finalized today that we've passed. One of them takes some excess funds from, I wouldn't say they're excess, but there's funds that are available from school districts to the tune of just under $50 million, about $46 million. And then there was some redirection of other funds from other agencies and so forth that will amount to another pretty good chunk of money that will get us up over $200 million. We had hoped to get where we could have a 3% reserve ending out this year. We're going to be short of that. We're probably going to end up with about a 2.1 or 2%, depending on what happens. There's one final bill that hasn't been completed. It's rediverting some funds from capital projects that we could use for other capital needs that were funded out of the general fund. We can take that money and put it back into the routine spending fund of the state. That bill is still hung up over in the House side. I don't know if it's going to come out or not. It wasn't a huge amount, but at this point, we're scratching up to get every dollar out of the seat cushions if we can do that.
We've been talking about sweeping funds from sweeping money from different funds. How does that actually work?
Well, we've got agencies all over the state that in their routine operations, they end up with some excess funds. There's everything from licensing boards, you know, the Board of Real Estate Appraisers. That's what I do for a living. They had excess dollars in their accounts from license fees and things like that. So there are funds in various things. There's there was a number of sources where there wasn't a ton of money in any one of them. But when you added up the aggregate, there's a fairly sizable amount of dollars. We did quite a bit of that during the special session back in September, and then we're doing it again as we can find those dollars. We're trying to put those together to help ease the pain a little bit so we don't have to cut schools. We don't have to cut some of our programs nearly as badly.
Well, I know if I don't have any cash in my purse, sometimes if I go through all the other purses and then all the coats then through the sofa, sometimes it's
same
enough
analogy, exactly.
It's enough for a pizza. So
that's right.
you know, we were talking about taking some money from LEADA, which is the fund that helps businesses expand and relocate here. Mm. Facebook used some of that money. Are you taking money from that fund?
The final proposal shows about $4 million coming out of that fund. I don't think the governor's real fond of that. She may have the option of line item vetoing that particular. $4 million is not a huge amount when we're talking about over $200 million. But again, every dollar that we can put into the system helps us in terms of trying to keep some of the existing programs that that we value around the state, try to keep those going as best we can. So every dollar counts. The governor is correct in that LEADA is very valuable. It helps us with Facebook. There's a program down in Roswell. There's programs all over the state that have been benefited by LEADA, and it's an economic development fund. It allows us to offer incentives to new companies to come into New Mexico and develop jobs, and or even existing companies to develop jobs and grow the economy, so that our dependence on oil and gas may not be quite as great in the future. So that there's a lot of value in the LEADA funds, and there's a lot of disagreement on whether we should be even tapping into those.
Well, it started with $50 million mm-hmm. in there. That's what the governor had asked for, and the legislature gave it to her. But there's still $34 million in it, and that was, what, 2 years ago? So isn't that
that's right, yes.
Isn't that a pretty big pile of money when you're talking about taking it from all these tiny accounts? Isn't that like a pretty big chunk that you could take more from?
Yep, absolutely. That's been the thought process, is that maybe those funds aren't going to be spent in the near future and could be used better somewhere else. But on the other hand, there are some plans and thoughts, and if you don't have the money available on some of the ongoing activities that the economic development folks are pushing, then if that money's not available, you could lose a company that's very valuable to our economy in some community around the state of New Mexico. It's a very volatile subject. There's a lot of disagreement on what we ought to be doing with that, whether it's more important to spend it now on ongoing programs, or whether it's a fund that we should look to the future. So I'm kind of in the camp of, we need to keep some significant amount of money available so that we can do things that will help the state prosper.
We have a caller, Charles, in Santa Fe. Charles, welcome and good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think we should do about the budget, Charles?
Well, after listening to some of the debate yesterday, I heard Veterans Services and some other agencies where some very meaningful cuts were being proposed. And I heard a lot of lip service from legislators about how horrible it is to be cutting schools and veterans programs. I didn't hear one person mention that all of this does not have to happen. For the solvency bill, maybe yes. But why is nobody talking more about revenue side fixes? We're cutting that to hurt our kids, our veterans, the people in need, students in schools. And I just don't understand where the Democrats are. I don't understand why there's no second voice to the governor's solution of cut, 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 crime, crime, crime.
Charles, thank you for that. And I'll put that to you, Senator Neville. Why are you guys not talking about raising revenue, as Charles asked?
Well, there is talk. There's a number of proposals that will be coming forth, mostly from the Democrat side, that will try to do things that will raise revenues. And I don't know if any of those will pass. I know that the governor's been steadfast in her opinion that she would not support those and would veto any of those kind of measures that come forth. And the argument is very simple, that if you tax in the wrong form or fashion, you scare off the businesses that you need to try to develop the economy. And if we're heavily, what has happened in many, many years is we've slowly shifted our dependence on for funding to the oil and gas industry because it was easy to do. The oil and gas would have periods of prosperity. So we get about a whole third of our budget from oil and gas. And then if you look at another big chunk of money we get, around $700 million, is from interest on our permanent funds. Our permanent funds are very, very important. They're over 10% of our budget currently. Excuse me. You take those two together, and we're talking about we're approaching half of that. Now, all of those permanent funds, in large part, stemmed from the oil and gas industry as well. So if you start taxing the non-oil and gas side of the equation. We've taxed the oil and gas people very heavily over time, and we've managed to shift our dependence more and more to that industry because it was easy to do. We need to broaden out our tax base. I grant you that we need to do something to try to stimulate revenues, but that revenue needs to be changed from our current situation where we're taking so much of it from the energy industries and look at a broader base so that we can try to bring in the businesses that will help employ people and generate more revenues for the state.
Thank you, Senator. We're going to talk a little bit more about trying to broaden that revenue base. Right now, we're going to take a short break. In a minute, we'll hear from State Representative Patricia Lundstrom, who heads a powerful House Finance Committee, and we're going to talk more about what lawmakers are doing to address this fiscal crisis. Should we cut more money or, as our caller just suggested, raise revenue somewhere else? We want to hear what you think. Where should we cut? Where should we try to raise money? Call us now, toll free, 877-899-5866. That's 877-899-5866. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support comes from the School for Advanced Research. Speaker Flag Miller explores the Bin Laden tapes and Al-Qaeda Thursday, January 26, 6:30 p.m. at the James A. Little Theater, Santa Fe. Tickets at lectures.sarweb.org.
I hate to let the facts get in the way of a fun story, but it's not true that Mozart wrote this while he was bowling. The piece has the nickname the Kegelstraat Trio, the Bowling Alley Trio, and whatever the inspiration, it's great music. Mozart and the Kegelstraat Trio on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. We are talking about the state budget and this year's solvency crisis and a big hole in next year's. With us on the phone is State Senator Stephen Neville, and we have now Representative Patricia Lundstrom, Democrat from Gallup. Welcome to the show, Representative.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me today.
Well, we know that you two are in the thick of it, negotiating between the two houses in the legislature on these this package of proposals that's going to the governor already. Representative, we've been talking about taking some money from the closing fund that's used to lure new businesses here or help them expand. That was your idea. Why is that money fair game?
Well, I think that money is fair game because of the large cash balance in there in terms of unencumbered projects. LEADA is a good idea. It's a good tool for the state of New Mexico. But during these very, very difficult budget times, we had to look at all available unencumbered funds, and there just happens to be some available. We're still leaving a healthy cash balance for them.
We have a caller on the line right now. Sarah in Albuquerque has an idea how to raise some money. Sarah, good morning, and welcome to the show.
Oh, yes. Yes, my suggestion is that the legalization of recreational marijuana is a topic of discussion right now. And when there's a sale, there's going to be always a state tax. And the sales tax from the marijuana would help fund their state. Because, Colorado, they have economic growth. They have a lot of money coming into their state from legalization. So that's my suggestion. Let's do it. Let's put it to the voters. Let's pass it. And let's generate some revenue.
Sarah, thank you for that. I know that there are several proposals out there already. There was a press conference at the Capitol yesterday on one of those plans. Senator Neville, how do you feel about that?
Well, personally, I'm not opposed to the concept, except that I live right next to Colorado, and I see that it's not all the panacea that everybody says it is. The Aztec schools, for example, are reporting all kinds of problems with truancy because kids are skipping out and going across the line. Even though it's technically illegal for them to purchase over there, they go across the line and find marijuana fairly easily. If you go around Denver, the homeless population has exploded. There's not all good things that come out of that. Yes, it would generate revenue. I have no qualms with that concept, but it's not something that you got to look at and say it's a total solution for our budget woes or anything else. It's a lot of people are in favor of it, and it may happen. It seems to be the trend, and I suspect that things will happen over the next few years that will probably resolve that nationally. But at this point, us being the only state in the region next to Colorado, we may end up attracting an element of homelessness or whatever the case is, because people come here for other reasons. In Colorado, you can grow your own. I sold some property in Colorado, and the first thing the guy did, who was from Albuquerque, by the way, first thing he did is put up a greenhouse and set up his six plants, and him and his wife and friends seem to sit around and enjoy their product as much as possible. And it's not all good. There are good and bad, I understand, on the economic side of it. But in Colorado, they've diverted all of their funds to certain uses, and it really didn't help their state budget that much, because they earmarked it, I think, for roads or something up there. And there's a lot of problems that go along with doing this kind of thing. We need to look at all of it before we decide what we're going to do.
Thank you, Senator. And, you know, to give some context here, the governor has said she would not sign any of these bills, but there is a proposal to bypass her by creating a constitutional amendment that would go straight to the voters. And if it went to the voters, it would probably pass. Yeah. We have on the phone now Leisha from we want to talk to Leisha from Albuquerque very briefly. Leisha, good morning and welcome to the show. Leisha, do we have you? Well, maybe we're having a little line trouble there. Representative Lundstrom, one of the parts of the package that you affixed yesterday, takes some money from public school districts. And this is about $1.7 million from Gallup Schools, that's in your neck of the woods. It's about $1.5 million from Farmington, where Senator Neville lives. And it's $12.5 million from Albuquerque. Representative, how can the schools afford to take this hit?
Well, I can tell you what we've done is we've actually, in the first concept, includes a across-the-board 2% that just would not be allocated in SEG. We have protected all the small school districts in this bill that use emergency cash balances. Emergency money from the state. We've protected all those small school districts. But in terms of this amount of money that would be coming from the school districts in to help us with our solvency, this has been agreed to in a bipartisan manner, and also with lots of the education professionals, the education lobbying groups, and a number of others that have said that they know that they have to help participate in our solvency issue. And it's been absolutely a hard choice for all of us. And certainly I don't like to see my school district take a $1.6 million hit. But it was a fair way to do this. And let's face it, if we don't have solvency in place, nobody operates.
So, Senator, you know, Governor Martinez originally wanted to take $120 million from schools, but in a different way, from their reserve funds. Why did you guys decide to take it from regular funding instead of reserves?
Well, either way, if you take it out of the SEG, the standard funding formula, it ultimately causes the schools to revert to their cash balances to fill the hole. So, ultimately, it ends up being the same thing. It's not much different. Those dollars are not, they all come from essentially the same place as far as the state funding portion. Now, in Gallup, as well as Farmington, there are other tribal infrastructure funds, and that's federal money. There's other sources. Some of those school districts have local two-mill levy programs. Those kind of things are certainly part of those cash reserves. But if a school loses some of its day-to-day funding, they've already hired their teachers. They got to have so many janitors, school buses, all of those kind of things. So this will just unfortunately force them to tap into cash balances. We did also one other thing that Patty did not mention is that we left all schools with at least 3% bottom line reserve. So nobody got totally taken down below zero.
That's a good point there. It comes from one place or the other. So if you take it from the regular, if you take it from their reserves, they're going to have to, you know, go for it anyway. We have to take a really quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the state's pocketbook with Representative Patty Lundstrom and Senator Stephen Neville. Where do you think the state's spending should be cut? What's off limits? Where should we try to raise revenue? Let us know. The number is toll-free, 1-877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. You can also post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or follow us on Twitter at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
It's time to elect four people to the KUNM Radio Board, and you're invited to nominate yourself. We welcome people from all walks of life. People from various backgrounds are encouraged, and a broad array of points of view and philosophies are welcome. Nominations must be in by 5 p.m. February 20th, mailed or delivered to University Secretary, Scholes Hall, UNM, 87131. For more information on the KUNM Radio Board elections, call 277-4664 or visit kunm.org/about.
Fresh produce is a key to healthy cooking. And there's no place like the backyard garden or local farm to get the freshest vegetables and fruits. Native gardeners and farmers are working hard to feed their communities, but not without facing obstacles. We'll hear more on this on the next Native America Calling. And if you have a garden, we want to hear from you, too.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Dolan. I'm here with Representative Patricia Lundstrom, the chair of a powerful committee that's working on solving the state's fiscal crisis. And Senator Stephen Neville is the ranking Republican on the Senate Finance Committee. We have on the phone with us Leisha, who we tried to talk to earlier. Leisha, good morning and welcome to the show.
Hi. Yeah, I've got some concerns, particularly that tax breaks were given to some of the better-off New Mexicans at the beginning of Martinez's term with the idea that these were the job creators. But, you know, we have a very high unemployment rate, and none of these guys really created any jobs. And their tax breaks weren't tied to creating jobs. So we've got a situation where while the rest of us are still paying our taxes and the rest of us are still working if we have a job, the people who are most able to afford their taxes got a nice tax break, and now Martinez doesn't want to, you know, tap this source. I'd say, yeah, if a business is creating jobs, we want to encourage that. But, you know, if it's just somebody who has used the tax break to pad their portfolio, clearly this isn't helping New Mexico at all. And, you know, and people think, well, why do the schools have reserves? Well, sometimes the schools have reserves because they couldn't afford to buy the textbooks. So they put that money in reserve until they could afford it. Or they know that they're going to have a higher need for substitutes. Some areas, some districts need more substitutes. Sometimes they end up having a substitute do the entire year in the classroom because they can't get a teacher to fill that role. You know, and that's where those reserves come in. We need to look at what are we actually taking away from regular Americans, regular taxpayers, in order to give the wealthier taxpayers their tax cut. That's just my comment.
Leisha, thank you for that. Senator Neville, how would you respond to Leisha?
Well, tax breaks have been given for decades, not just this governor, for a lot of incentives to try to grow new business. That is true. And for the most part, those are not given out just to good old boys or friends of the governor. That just doesn't happen. That's a urban legend, I guess you might say. But we do give tax breaks for large companies. Intel got it. We have a company down in southern New Mexico, the uranium processing company, LES, down there that received some significant incentives. We've got the new Facebook program that's based on tax incentives or various incentives, including tax and lead and so forth. We do those kind of things. We try to bring in companies that develop jobs. It's not specific to this governor, so it's not fair to blame Governor Martinez. But what has happened, and I'll freely admit this, we have given out so many tax breaks that we don't have the revenue coming in the non-oil side of our economy, that we need to do something as far as trying to redraw our tax program to some system that is more balanced and broader based than what we have currently with the oil and gas industry that's so volatile.
Thank you for that. Senator, we're going to let you go in 1 minute here, but before we do, I want to ask you, Majority Leader Michael Sanchez, fiery character in the Senate for so long, lost his reelection bid, and now you have new leadership with the mild-mannered Senator Peter Wirth, who was chosen by lawmakers to replace him. Has that changed the dynamic in the Senate for you?
Well, probably. I got along well with Senator Sanchez. I never had any personal problems with him. Once in a while, he'd kill off one of my bills. That certainly didn't make you happy, but that's just the nature of the beast, and I'm sure Senator Wirth's going to do the same thing on occasion. They're different people. I've known Senator Wirth long before either one of us got in the legislature. I've known Representative Lundstrom as well since long before either one of us were in the legislature. So New Mexico is a small state. What's more important, I think, sometimes in our partisanship is our friendships and our relationships that we develop around the state with folks that we have to work with when we get to the Santa Fe. And the folks that are here as elected officials as well as those that come in and lobby for various interests. So we all know a lot of people around New Mexico, and I think working with Senator Wirth in my personal situation will be very, very good. I'll be able to work with him. He seems he's a good friend, and we can communicate. And we sat over dinner last night and talked a little bit about what we needed to do and some of the things the state is going to have to address. So I think the dynamics are going to be good. Peter's a little more stable in terms of the way he deals with the colleagues on the floor, and that's going to be a beneficial thing. So I'm looking forward to working with him.
Thank you so much for being with us this morning, Senator Neville. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Bye.
We have a couple comments here. We have from Mary Jo. She says, cutting education in New Mexico hurts our economy in the long run. And we have an email from Anna who says she started working for the state in 2008 and she hasn't received a raise since then. So she opposes the governor's plan to increase employee contributions to pensions in order to help fix the budget. Representative Lundstrom, you also have new leadership in the House as Democrats have taken it back from Republicans. How is that working for you so far?
Oh, I think it's working fine. Our group is very united. We have lots of initiatives that we're going to be taking up, and one of them, as you were discussing earlier, was to look closely at these loopholes, these tax loopholes. I mean, that's not necessarily raising taxes, but that is making sure that if we can't afford some of these things, we shouldn't be doing them.
That's a good idea. So you have passed some plans that will help deal with this year's budget hole. What do you think you're going to do about next year's?
Well, it'll be we'll have to put together a revenue package that could include a couple of different things, certainly raising revenue or closing some of these loopholes. Obviously, we'll have to continue looking at is there any other opportunities for downsizing. I know that the governor has put forth consolidating agencies, but we have to look carefully at that. You know, I don't know how much efficiency you get, but those are some ideas that have been floating around.
Well, we will try and catch up with you again and hear more about the package of proposals that you'll put together to fix next year's budget hole. Representative, thank you so much for being on the phone with us this morning.
All righty. Well, thank you for the invite.
Thank you. We have Chris on the phone in Santa Fe now. Chris, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I was wondering how much of our revenues go out of state. And the question is really in the context of just like we have a new president who is promoting America first, is there any discussion in the legislature about New Mexico first? And some things come to mind is how much of our money goes out of state to testing agencies for the purposes of evaluating teacher and school performance. And I imagine similarly there are tax breaks given to out-of-state corporations. Is there any discussion about how much money is spent out of state? And how can I find out how much is going out of state?
Good question.
That's my question.
Thank you, Chris. Good question. And I'm going to put that to my next two guests in 1 minute. But first, let's hear from William in Bernalillo. William, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have two things I'd like to speak about. The first is a gas tax. I'm a Republican. I'm a combat vet, and I believe people should pay for things they use. And we haven't raised our gas taxes in 20 years, and I think that's a great place to go because I don't think people should pay for things they don't use but should pay for things they do use. And the my other question is the Christmas tree bill. Is there going to be any change in that? You know, that seems like pure pork, and that's not the way we should distribute those kind of funds. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, William. And so let's talk about these two things with our next two guests. We have this morning Richard Anklam, the executive director of the New Mexico Tax Research Institute. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
And Dan Boyd, who is the Albuquerque Journal Capital Bureau Chief. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Those were two great calls that happened to tie in with exactly the kind of stuff I was going to ask you guys. So, Richard, the last caller, William, he said he was talking about the Christmas tree bill, which is our little nickname for capital outlay, which is money that the state divides between lawmakers with the idea of spending it on capital projects like roads and bridges and buildings, university buildings, things like that.
Right.
We've reported a lot on how that doesn't seem to actually work to achieve that purpose. Is there any movement that you've seen so far to reform that process this session?
Yes. Not to reform the process so much. There was a, I believe, a House amendment that would have flipped the capital package this year into general fund reserves, and it was voted down. Capital is very, very precious to lawmakers. It's one of the only things they can actually bring back to their own people. So it's often not spent perhaps as efficiently from a statewide perspective as it could be.
William called it pork.
Well, pork is the affectionate term for it. I would love to see some some reform. Right now, I think the debate in that category would be, well, if we don't spend the money on capital projects, some of which are certainly potentially needed and very useful, that's also money that's not going to mostly the construction industry. So those folks get really nervous when they hear that the state's not doing any capital projects because the private sector's not doing a lot of capital projects, starting to do a little bit more, thankfully. And we know the oil and gas industry is in a slump, so they're not spending a lot of capital right now. So so the people that live on those kinds of projects are starving and hungry. That said, if you flipped, I think the number was about $61 million into the general fund, that would go a long ways towards having to not cut or increase taxes in other areas. So there's a trade-off with everything.
That's a good point. Our previous that was still William, I guess. He was asking about the gas tax. He said he's a Republican to combat that, and he likes the idea that people pay for things they use. So, Dan Boyd, we've talked about the gas tax every session since I can remember. And I'm sure we will hear about it again. Have you seen any movement on the gas tax idea this year, Dan Boyd?
I've heard a lot of talk on that. I expect there will be a bill filed. I believe Senator John Arthur Smith is behind that idea, and I've heard talk from a few other legislators as well. I think obviously the big question on that is the governor, and if she's been pretty steadfast in this no new tax stance, and obviously has veto authority. I think there would even be some Republicans, like your last caller, who would potentially support that. I mean, the devil's always in the details, but that could be an option. I do expect to see it come forward, but I think it will come down to the governor and whether she gives a little bit on that issue.
Folks, we need to take a really quick break right here. But when we come back, we're going to talk more with reporter Dan Boyd and tax expert Richard Anklam about how the state might bring in more money, whether it's from something like a gas tax or closing some tax loopholes and things like that. How do you think New Mexico should increase revenue? The number is toll free 1-877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. Or you can tag us in a tweet with your question at KUNM News. We'll be right back.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support comes from the School for Advanced Research. Speaker Flag Miller explores the Bin Laden tapes and Al-Qaeda Thursday, January 26, 6:30 p.m. at the James A. Little Theater, Santa Fe. Tickets at lectures.sarweb.org.
I hate to let the facts get in the way of a fun story, but it's not true that Mozart wrote this while he was bowling. The piece has the nickname the Kegelstraat Trio, the Bowling Alley Trio, and whatever the inspiration, it's great music. Mozart and the Kegelstraat Trio on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Gwyneth Doland, your host. I'm here with Albuquerque Journal Capital Bureau Chief Dan Boyd and Richard Anglum, the Executive Director of the New Mexico Tax Research Institute. We have a few email and Twitter messages from listeners this morning. We have one from Don who asks, why don't we tie taxes to the cost of oil and gas so that as we earn more from that industry, taxes go down and vice versa? Richard, could that work? It sounds complicated.
It could be complicated. It could be difficult to administer. Unfortunately, right now, we kind of do that already. You know, the price of oil is down and our revenues are down. And when it goes up, they'll go back up. It doesn't necessarily lend itself towards the best budgetary practices in the long run. So, yeah, some kind of a mechanism to smooth things would be a very good idea.
Yeah, we have an email from Bonnie. She wants to know, do we tax big box stores? She thinks we don't. And she wants to know why not. They aren't going to leave the state. Is that true, Richard?
No. They're taxpayers like everybody else. Senator Wirth has a bill, combined reporting, this year, SB1, which was targeted by some for groups like that. But I believe it was part of that corporate tax package 641 a few years ago that one of your earlier callers, I believe, was referencing, where they carved big box stores into the mandatory combined regime, which was not something that was welcomed by those retail stores. So they're not in a happy tax position from their perspective. They're probably in about the right tax perspective or place from most people's perspective.
We have a comment on Twitter from David who says that by refusing to raise taxes, Governor Martinez is making political ideology more important than the state's well-being. Dan Boyd, you are an acute observer of the governor and her political ideology. Does this make sense, what David is saying? Is she making that ideology more important than the state's well-being by refusing to raise taxes? Are people saying that?
I think you could make that argument. I believe in other states there are Republican governors, that are considering revenue measures or tax increases. I do think in New Mexico it's not that simple to just say tax increases. Obviously, a lot of folks around the state are struggling economically, and certain tax increases could be harmful or damaging. But I think there's a lot of legislators certainly right now saying, we've cut about as much as we can. We've taken money from schools, and we need to kind of keep all options on the table. And that's one so far that hasn't been on the table.
The governor has been steadfast, as Senator Neville mentioned earlier, that she would not raise taxes. But I was interested to note that the Greater Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce, which has always opposed tax increases, last week said there could be some wiggle room with some tax increases. So all of a sudden, these things seem like maybe they're a little bigger part of the conversation than they have been. John in Bernalillo has an idea for a tax that could help. Good morning, John, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. My comment regards internet sales. I see UPS trucks delivering Amazon packages all the time, and all this money goes out of state. No taxes are paid to New Mexico, and we end up subsidizing huge skyscrapers in Seattle. And I wonder why that would be more important than our teachers and our schools. And it also hurts sales in New Mexico that do pay taxes. So I wondered why that wouldn't be on the table.
Thank you, John. I've heard some twittering about that. Richard?
I believe it is on the table. I know there was a measure that was introduced in the special session. It was as a part of the deal. The governor didn't really want to do that. It was taken out. I believe that is present in Representative Harper's tax reform package that he's been working on. I think there's going to be some standalone proposals also introduced in the Senate and probably in the House. Well, actually, in both, I'm sure. So, yes, it shouldn't be off the table. Even for most conservatives, it's not necessarily a tax increase. It's a fairness issue.
Because it hurts local businesses who do have.
There's competitiveness arguments, yes. Mm-hmm. And there's complication issues on the other side as well, but I think they pale, you know, in the weight of things. The legal landscape on a national level is gray. And so states are saber-rattling. They're trying to get on the top of the list as to who Amazon and others sign up and comply with first. And should we be doing that? Yeah, probably. For the reasons the caller stated, all of that happens and it's not fair.
So you mentioned Representative Jason Harper of Rio Rancho and Democrat Bill McCamley from Las Cruces. They have been working on a package that it's not actually aimed at raising any money, but on this fairness issue you were talking about and on broadening the tax base, as Senator Neville mentioned earlier. They wanted to lower the gross receipts tax, create a flat income tax, close a bunch of tax loopholes, and try to collect this sales tax on internet purchases. They've been taking a lot of hits from all sides
right.
on these things. So is this thing possible? Dan, have you been following McCamley and Harper as they are trying to shepherd this little package?
I have been, and I wouldn't call it a little package.
Yeah, I misspoke. What was I saying?
I'm told that I did speak with Representative Harper this week. I'm told it's still in the works, but it should be introduced soon. I mean, it's going to be a 300-page-plus bill. And it, as you mentioned, contains a lot of different parts. I think the thinking is maybe by putting that all in there, getting rid of a lot of deductions and credits, even lowering the base GRT rate, the online part. I mean, that maybe that might be tough to swallow, but better to do it all in one gulp than kind of the individual parts. Certainly complicated. I mean, I know I've spoke with Richard for about an hour just on the online sales tax part alone. So I think it's going to be a heavy lift, but, it's a discussion worth having.
Well, it is bipartisan. You know, there are Republicans and Democrats working on this bill. So it's not as though it'll be immediately supported by Democrats or immediately rejected by Republicans. Let's go to Daniel in Albuquerque on the phone right now. Daniel, good morning and welcome to the show. What should we do about this budget problem?
Well, good morning. It seems to me that there is two pieces to this. There's a short-term issue where right now we don't have money, and there's a long-term setting things up for the future so this doesn't happen again, right? And so my question is, for the short term, could issuing municipal bonds or some kind of, I know it's debt, but issuing some kind of bonds that we buy into to fund the government until they can get it together? And then the second question is, how is the taxation and legalization of marijuana not the main long-term solution? When we look at states like Colorado, where they have more money than they know what to do with, their schools are flush and funded. They're now tackling homeless problems with the rest of the money that they can't spend because there's too much of it. I don't understand how that's not the best idea.
Daniel, let's ask Richard Anklum from the Tax Research Institute. Is cannabis, recreational cannabis, the solution to all of our problems?
No, it's not the solution to all of our problems, but it could raise some money. I mean, to the caller's point, you know, it's
how much money?
You're going to try to pin me down. I've seen a study on this using rates that are applicable in Colorado and Washington and other states. So depending on the rate that you apply, and that's important, it limits how much you can make. But if your rate is too high, then you don't get rid of your underground economy, that you know, the illegal activity that you're trying to get rid of, and you don't raise money as a result of that as well. So Alaska, for instance, had to reduce their tax rate on their cannabis recently, whereas Colorado actually had to suspend their Tabor mechanism, which when they collect too much money, they're supposed to give it back. That's what happened with their marijuana. But their situation was a little different. They were one of the first. So you get the tourism, you get that initial people from New Mexico, Arizona, Texas driving in.
So if
New Mexico were to do this in a year or two, you wouldn't see that kind of reaction. Although certainly the, you know, that section that aren't paying tax in the state today. I grew up here. People are consuming marijuana in the state, I'm pretty sure. At least, I've seen them do it. If we were to tax that, it would raise some money. $100 million maybe a little more. I can get you a better number. But it would take time for that, to get everything in place. So to the caller's point of now money versus the future, you've heard Smith say now money. Why can't we raise taxes to fix the school problem for 17? You can't get money in the door fast enough to do it that way. So it's all going to be 17. That's the next conversation. That's when they're talking about tax increases and maybe other cuts or reorganizations.
I imagine lawmakers have got to be looking at a number like $100 million and thinking, whoa, that's a really nice pool of money. We have a couple comments here. We have one from Bonnie who says, she wants to know, a comment from David, Sherry says, taxes should be increased on higher income folks in New Mexico in order to spare schools and other state programs and services. And we have an email from Eli who says that we should create a ghost tax for people who own property in New Mexico but aren't residents. Critics of that proposal, they could argue that that's taxation without representation, could they? Richard?
If you have property in the state, we can certainly tax you. You do have limitations on how you can discriminate, but you can have things like a homeowner's exemption. We have one in the state. It almost is non-existent. So, yes, an investor from California with $1 million house in California pays some of the cheapest property taxes in the country. And if you live there, you do too. But he's getting a better deal and is shocked at the how small their tax bill is sometimes. So, yeah, you could do that to some extent. You got to be, you can't be too parochial about getting the outside guys. But right now we're probably too kind to those folks. And that goes into that property tax discussion, tax lightning, 3%, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Which you don't want to go down right now.
Dan, so lawmakers have they've got this plan ready to send to the governor about how to fix this budget hole in the fiscal year that we're in that ends this coming summer. But we've got a bigger hole in the following year's budget. We've already done some painful stuff. What are these lawmakers looking at doing, Dan, for the next fiscal year?
Yeah, I think attention is going to have to shift pretty quickly to the next year. We've already, as you mentioned, enacted some pretty deep spending cuts, the school reductions, and swept a lot of money out of the different corners, like Senator Neville said.
We've looked in every purse and every coat pocket. We've been under the sofa.
That's right. I mean, I think there is some hope that maybe the economy improves, but it's going to be FY18 is going to be another tough year. Senator Smith has said we're looking at, potentially at least a $300 million shortfall for next year. So I think there will be revenue options on the table, and maybe they'll be sent to the governor's office and what she decides to do with them. I think the question will be, we've kind of patched this together, but what lessons will be learned from this downfall, and will the state see its credit rating downgraded again? It's already happened once, and I think there's some concern that could happen again, which would mean a higher borrowing cost for local governments and things like that.
One of the things, Dan, that's making predictions hard for me to make is the fact that we have new leadership in the House and Senate. There are new committee chairs and new folks on the committees. And this surprised me. I kept telling people, nothing happens in the first 2 weeks. Don't worry about it. Nothing's going to happen. And whoa, bang. I mean, does this seem faster than in previous sessions that they've jumped on big, important stuff?
Yeah, I've certainly never covered a 60-day session like this to be, working on the first Saturday of the session in the House. And some of that obviously is passing these solvency measures, and there's some urgency to do that. But I think, all legislators understand the gravity of the situation here. And that is kind of the wild card, this new leadership and kind of what's on the table, what's off the table. And if they look kind of outside the box, I mean, there's even some talk of, maybe reducing certain kind of minor crime penalties, things like that, to kind of benefit the court system, which is really overburdened and underfunded. There's some new possibilities, things like that. But certainly there's going to be more discussion of cuts and revenues, and it's going to be a shadow that kind of falls over the entire session.
Folks, we want to hear more from you. What do you think we should do to fix the hole in next year's budget? We've got to come up with a lot more money. Richard, how much is it? 100 and
Well, I'm not sure after the solvency measures come out this time, but it's ugly.
It's a bunch. What should we do to fix that? We want to hear from you. 877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. Right now, we have a call from Tony in Albuquerque who wants to fix the tax rates. Tony, what should we do about tax rates?
I'm sort of watching the legislative session here, and I'm somewhat concerned that there's a lot of talk about gross receipts tax, and as your panelist was saying, you know, it's a good idea to broaden the base and, you know, potentially lower the tax rate. But, you know, one of the big problems that was created, actually going back to the Richardson administration, was the flattening of the highest tax rate. It caps out at 4.9%, you know, very quickly, whereas we used to have a much more progressive tax system. And the other reason I'm calling just to sort of, and I would love to hear, again, more commentary on this from your panel here, but, you know, the gross receipts tax in New Mexico is a fairly unusual tax. A lot of us think of it as a sales tax, but it doesn't act in quite the same way that a sales tax acts in, say, Nebraska or Ohio. And there's some pretty credible evidence, I think, and some kind of bipartisan consensus that creates some real economic distortions that disincentivize businesses in New Mexico.
Tony, so, I'm going to put that to them. I'll do it right now, or I'm going to do it after we talk to Shelley in Santa Fe, who has a couple more ideas. Shelley, good morning. Welcome to the show. Just briefly, what are your hot ideas?
Thank you so much. Alcohol and tobacco taxes, opportunity immediately, tax structure already in place, raising alcohol price tax by 25 cents a drink, fair tax would raise $154 million for the state.
Thank you for that, Shelley. Okay, in the last few minutes that we have, Richard, what about, would raising the tax on booze 25 cents raise $154 million? Is that a number you have in your head?
It's not a number I have in my head, and we don't actually tax per drink. So when promoters do that sort of thing, they're doing a bunch of backroom math. We tax by gallon, liter, barrel, that sort of thing. So you have to divide it by ounces. And
that's okay. I drink by the gallon, liter, and barrel.
Well, yeah, me too. Those taxes are interesting, tobacco and alcohol, because they're highly regressive. They're more regressive than sales taxes. I think I joked on the show once, just to be politically incorrect, that it's the politically correct way to tax poor people. At the same time, you are trying to reduce unhealthy activity, and you can do that through taxes and through other mechanisms. But when you're trying to raise money and reduce an activity, you've got a kind of a fundamental contradiction occurring. And that gets interesting, too. But, yeah, you can raise money. Any tax program, raise the rate, you will raise money.
Dan, we've got about 30 seconds here. Do you see this legislature raising taxes on food this session? I mean, bringing back the food tax?
Frankly, I don't. I know the idea has been out there, and I expect to see it more. I just think there's opposition to that from, you know, on the Democratic side, that it's a regressive tax, and also on the Republican side, just folks like the governor who are opposed to any tax increases.
Thank you so much, Dan Boyd, for talking to us. Dan is the Albuquerque Journal Capital Bureau Chief. Thanks.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Richard Anklam from the New Mexico Tax Policy, Tax Research Institute. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Gwyneth. My pleasure.
We have posted links to the information we discussed today, so check that out at KUNM.org. If you missed any of this program or you want to share it with people, the audio will be on our website, as is the audio from previous shows. Tune in next week as we dive deep into how families and communities are coping with opioid addiction in northern New Mexico. Public health reporter Ed Williams has produced a 6-part series on the generational impacts of heroin addiction, and we'll feature those next week, including an hour-long documentary next Thursday morning at 8 here on 89.9 KUNM. You can email comments about today's show to callinshow@KUNM.org, find us on Facebook, KUNM Radio, or on Twitter, KUNM News. Today's show is part of the People, Power, and Democracy Project that examines ethics, transparency, and accountability in state government. It's funded by the Thornburg Foundation and by KUNM listeners. Find out more online at KUNM.org. Thanks to Marino Spencer, who engineered our show today. Anna Landy screened your calls, and Lane Baumgartel is our executive producer. And I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland.